I put in the proposal to write a book about chemicals that changed the world.
And I started to believe it.
Now, the real world of chemicals that changed the world. I don't know that I believed it when I started. But by the time I finished, I think, yeah, it really worked.
The food issue is a theme that continues in your examination of ascorbic acid or vitamin C, which of course was vital to the long voyage of exploration. The death rate from scurvy on those voyages was extraordinary, wasn't it?
Yes, horrendous.
I think you relate the story of Vasco da Gama in the late 15th century. 100 of 160 crew died of scurvy. We know this, didn't we?
And when Magellan did his circumnavigation, he started out with
256 men.
19 returned. Most of them died of scurvy.
And ascorbic acid is important because why?
Well, it's needed for... Actually, you know, it's one of those things that they... Every time they do more investigations, they find more need for it in the body. I mean, it does things like keep the collagen around out in the cells. It makes everything work. And that's why when you look at the collagen thing, when you look at what it does, when you look at the symptoms of scurvy, you know, your teeth start to fall out, your skin goes, everything starts to break down. So important.
If Captain Cook knew about scurvy, and he did, why didn't Robert Falcon Scott figure it out?
You know, it's very interesting. I think they knew, but they didn't believe. Cook was considered a fanatic. I mean, he was absolutely right.
He didn't know the structure
of ascorbic acid. But it was still, even in the early 1900s, people still didn't believe. They thought that scurvy was from... rotten meat or there were other processed fruits, so that they didn't take the precautions they should have.
And your premise is that Cook circumnavigated New Zealand because of the ascorbic acid.
So that's my chemical that would get me down to New Zealand.
Right.
But, you know, if Van Diemen had known about scurvy, maybe he would have spent more time instead of just going, and he didn't stop in New Zealand, did he? So we might be talking Dutch now, or Magellan might have got down, we might be talking Portuguese.
Or Manhattan might be still in the hands of the Dutch.
Not that very helpful.
Glucose story is similarly interesting in terms of, you know, phenomenal changes to the world on account of the hunger for sugar.
Growth rate. Yeah. Millions, maybe 50 million
Africans going to the Americas. Yeah.
And I was astounded to find that it took... Columbus took sugar to the West Indies on his second voyage. 22 years later, the first slave-grown sugar was exported to Europe. And it took 22 years. And that whole slave trade, and that was the basis, actually, sugar was the basis of the Industrial Revolution, the wealth that allowed England to get that head start on the Industrial Revolution.
And similarly with cricket, which was the Industrial Revolution, another of your molecules that changed the world.
And of course, cotton is mainly is cellulose, and cellulose is a polymer of glucose. I kept finding these neat little links, historical links and chemical links.
Yeah.
It's amazing how simple these chemicals are, though, isn't it?
Yep. Very well-known chemicals. I mean, lots of people have said to me, why didn't you include, and they come up with their idea of a chemical. You know.
What do they come up with that you wish you'd included?
They don't come up with anything I wish I'd included, because, you know, I didn't say these were the most important molecules in the world. These were my choice. And I was looking for chemicals that had good stories and interesting chemistry.
You might have stretched credibility a bit with your witch's story.
Yeah, that was my most, that was the most,
that was wild.
Yeah. You know, that was, I found that most interesting one.
All right, tell me that one.
Well, I hadn't realised how pervasive and how horrifying the witch hunts in Europe were from about the 1400s through almost to the 1800s.
You think that in some villages and towns in Europe, virtually all the women had been killed.
I mean, it was such a horrendous crime that if you were convicted of witchcraft, if you were accused of witchcraft,
you didn't need a trial. If you were accused, that's enough to assume you were guilty.
That's the accusation. And the whole, I mean, I'm sure there were many other reasons, but many of the women were herbalists. I mean, the herbal tradition in Europe passed down through women. And often, perhaps, they were elderly women living on the edge of the village, making a living by their herbal their ability to cure with herbs. And if something went wrong in the village, they would, the finger would be pointed at them saying, you know, you're a witch. But the whole idea of witches on broomsticks and the flying, and they did have flying ointments. I actually found most of this out in a book I discovered in the London Library of the Royal Society of Chemistry, a little book tucked away, and I was reading this and I was thinking, is this what I really think it's saying? So they, many of the flying cells that they rubbed on and absorbed through the skin contained either henbane or mandrake or can't think of the other one. And these are all plants of the members of the deadly nightshade family. And they contain hallucinatory alkaloids. And modern discussions, modern experiments on these alkaloids say that the hallucinations are very, very real and sound like the descriptions of the witches would have said of, you know, I used my flying ointment and I flew off on my broomstick to a Sabbath.
Really?
And women would have believed they had gone off and people said to me, why would they do that? And I think the answer is it's escapism. You know, life would have been pretty tough. This would have been why do people use drugs now? Because that's speculative.
And why a broomstick?
You want me going to wild booze?
Well, actually, yes.
I read this and didn't really think. I thought, am I reading this,
ladies and gentlemen?
But evidently, what they did is explained that they would put the flying ointments on the broomstick, and the book was very coyly. They rubbed them under the armpits and in other hairy places. So the image of a witch astride a broomstick had quite sexual connotations.
And would have been, absorbed.
Because the in the genital area of the skin is very thin, and that's one of the ways that we absorb medications now. We use transdermal absorption.
I'm talking to Penny Le Couture, who's the author of a book called Napoleon's Certain 17 Molecules That Changed History. I was talking to the biographer of Rachel Carson, mm-hmm. and she was talking about the DDT. People now lament that Rachel Carson had such a huge influence on getting DDT banned because it meant the rise of malaria once again. What's your take on this?
So
DDT is one of the molecules that you talk about.
Yes. I think DDT has had a really bad press. It's actually one of my favourite molecules. I like to be controversial on it. But if it had been used, as it really should have been used, as an insecticide for the malarial mosquito, sprayed on the inside, it was very cheap, sprayed on the inside of
hats. Just twice a year or something
twice
was
year,
all they needed,
year,
wasn't it?
Yeah. All that they needed. I mean, we got rid of malaria in the developed world. I mean, malaria is not a tropical disease. Malaria was known in the Arctic Circle. I mean, they used to have malaria outbreaks in Ottawa. And Ottawa, I think, is one of the coldest and most northern capitals in the world. But we got rid of it. And now it has come roaring back into countries where DDT is not able to be used. And anything else is really very expensive. We should have never used it as an agricultural chemical. It should never have been dumped on fields in this system. But it was cheap.
Mm.
It was cheap and was very effective.
Mm. And so Rachel Carson's case was that the indiscriminate use of it in the agricultural area
mm-hmm.
was wrong and destructive.
Yeah.
And I suppose the rest of the world picked that up and carried it to an illogical conclusion.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think I'm not saying we should spray chemicals around. We should, we should use chemicals extremely carefully. However, without agricultural chemicals, we wouldn't be able to sustain our modern day society.
One of the other points you make is that chemicals can be as toxic, whether they be natural or man-made.
Mm-hmm.
There are
mm-hmm.
plenty of very, very toxic natural chemicals.
Yes.
So there is really not a great deal to differentiate between.
No.
When you say organic? Give me a definition of organic chemistry.
Organic chemistry is really the chemistry of carbon compounds, but, you know, carbon dioxide is a carbon compound. We don't think of it as being organic. I mean, the original definition of organic was compounds that came from living things, and there was a sort of distinction between compounds from living things and non-living things, and we soon found out that actually we could make the same chemical compounds
that are produced in nature. And I always tell my students, nature is the best chemist in the world.
Well, for diamonds,
mm-hmm. diamond is not we don't consider organic. Diamond organic. No.
It's irrational, the definition.
Yes, yes it is.
Okay.
Yes.
It's nice to find something completely irrational in the chemical field.
I imagine. Phenol,
mm-hmm.
from carbolic acid, from coal tar.
Mm-hmm.
It was used as an antiseptic,
yes.
and it was hugely valuable in World War II because it stopped people's limbs being locked up when they got gangrene. Mm-hmm. It managed to contain infection.
Yes.
What's phenol? What is phenol?
It's a benzene ring with an OH group on it. It's a very simple molecule. A benzene ring is a ring, a six-membered ring, with alternating double and single bonds. And you notice I'm waving my hand. I can't talk about chemistry without waving my hands. And it's got an OH group on it. Very simple molecule, known for hundreds of years, but it's a very effective antiseptic. It's not used now. It's actually very it's very corrosive. But it made a huge difference in antiseptic surgery.
Now, back to the theme of how a tiny, tiny difference can actually mean a world of difference.
Mm-hmm.
The phenol molecule is almost exactly the same as the vanillin
molecule,
which gives vanilla its particular character.
Just another few chemical groups added on to the side.
But vanillin would be no use as an antiseptic.
No.
What is it that tiny difference does to change the nature of something from an antiseptic to an unwholesome thing?
You're asking a very complicated question there. Often it is if we're looking at what makes things toxic in our bodies, often it is the enzymes in our bodies break down. All you need to do is make a small chemical change, and the enzyme, often because of shape, the shape of the molecule cannot be, you know, if you change the shape of the molecule, the enzyme that was reacting with it doesn't react with it any longer. So often, you know, in our, from biochemical point of view, it's not compatible with the enzymes any longer. We think also that smell is very much, shape of the molecules is very important in smell. So if you slightly change the shape, you change the smell because of these smell receptors that we have in our noses don't bond or bind with that molecule.
You have a very interesting explanation of how penicillin works.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about how that happens.
Well, penicillin is a very unusual compound, a naturally occurring compound, because it has a four-membered ring, and four-membered rings are not very stable. And what happens...
They're not very stable because the angle...
Because the angle of the carbon-carbon angle, carbon-bond.
Uh-huh.
Carbon-bond bonds at an angle, tetrahedral angle, which is about 109 degrees. And in a four-membered ring, the bond angle is closer to 90 degrees, even if it packs to try and get away from 90 degrees, close to 90 degrees. So the ring is not particularly stable, and it's able to work by the ring opens and attaches to the cell wall.
It opens because it's unstable.
Because it's unstable. And that's why penicillins are not particularly, you have to keep them in the, you have to keep them cold. When you keep them up, that ring opens. So when it attaches to the cell wall and breaks down the ability of the bacteria to react, to continue to grow because the cell wall is no longer...
As a result of its own instability.
Yes.
But there are some bacteria which have adapted to that.
Yes.
How have they done that?
They have, some bacteria, you know, if they're penicillin resistant, have developed an enzyme which can break down the penicillin before it attacks their cell wall. See, we don't have cell, animals don't have cell walls, so it doesn't affect us Even though, you know, it's like a penicillin, it doesn't affect our cell walls. We have cell membranes. Now, I'm not a biologist, so this is sort of...
That's another artificial deception, of course. The whole idea of serendipity, of course, occurs throughout it. William Perkin, you relate, was trying to synthesize quinine